You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today, off to downtown LA, to the Red Line Bar that sits on the corner of 6th and Los Angeles, right near the Toy District. It's showtime at the Red Line, and drag performers are taken to the stage, dancing, lip-syncing, and collecting dollar bills from an excited and generous audience.
So, 1, 2, 3.
Sebastian Delgado is here to support his partner, who's getting ready to slay the crowd. And tonight, Delgado is so glad to be out at a gay bar.
It's so great to be able to come back to bars and see all the nightlife again, especially queer nightlife. So this bar specifically is super important for me and my partner because we're both performers, and this is one of the first bars that we actually performed at. It kind of feels like we're coming back to normal.
Ah, returning to normal. That is a theme that you've heard a lot on Greater LA over the past year, and it's a theme on the show today because today's a special day. It's been 3 years almost to the day since our very first episode of Greater LA. And to celebrate the occasion, we're checking back in with some of the people you heard from over the past year to see how they're doing and what kind of normal they're in now. First up, we're headed back to the Red Line Bar in KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo, who is our tour guide on this update. Hello, Danielle.
Hey there, Steve.
You were at the Red Line just the other night. It sounds like a lot of fun. How'd it go?
Steve, it honestly felt like the last 2 years of this pandemic had never happened. When I walked through the doors at the Red Line, folks were gathered around, bartenders were slinging drinks, and eventually drag performers were bringing down the house with their fantastic performances. But not too long ago, the vibe here at the Red Line was totally different. Back in January 2021, Red Line owner Oliver Buche gave us a tour of the bar that was forced to shut down due to COVID restrictions. And he had to record it through his iPhone and send it to us instead of us going there to interview him at the bar because, you know, there was just still so much unknown about the virus and we were being as cautious as possible. Here's a snippet of that tour that Oliver gave us.
This was once something so special when people used to fill the dance floor with laughter and cheers and dancing and music, and now it's just silent.
In total, the Red Line sat silent for 15 months, Steve.
The last couple of years, Danielle, have been brutal for LA's gay bars. West Hollywood, I know a bar there called Rage, shut down. Oil Can Harry's, which we've talked about on this program, also closed. I remember when we first heard Oliver's story last year, he was understandably under a lot of stress and not to mention a lot of debt, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, even though patrons weren't walking through the doors when the Red Line was closed for those 15 months, the bills sure kept on coming through. Between back rent, water, power, insurance, Oliver says he now owes nearly $500,000, $487,000 to be exact. He did get some help in the form of PPP and disaster relief loans, but as he's learned, they come with a price.
You think like a disaster relief loan is something that's like, yay, it's going to help you. You don't have to pay interest. The interest is higher than a mortgage. The payments are as long as a mortgage. But we said, we're going to take it out. We're going to take a 30-year loan out. I'll figure out a way to pay it so we could survive. But that's 30 years of paying something that there is no physical thing you get.
And that's the thing about debt. You're always trying to catch up. $500,000, obviously, Danielle, is a lot. How is he planning on paying all that back?
So right now, Oliver is taking it day by day. As he explains it, the Red Line is, of course, welcoming back customers. But through the course of it all, they're making just enough cash to cover daily operating costs.
We don't make $500,000 a year. We don't make half of that a year. We don't even make a quarter of that a year. We are a true, like, forgive the term, but like mom and pop, even though I'm a single father. But it's very much a like local small business. It's like myself and my staff and the performers that grace us with their presence, and that's it.
So Oliver is doing everything himself at the bar right now, and that includes working as a bartender, as a barback, a DJ, even taking up another round of construction in the bar like he did during lockdown. That being said, though, Oliver is considering financial alternatives. That includes starting up a new GoFundMe fundraiser. Last year, Red Lion raised some $40,000, which helped pay for some of his bills. But he does admit that he'd rather pull the trigger on his backup plan, which includes consolidating all that he owes into one massive payment. And Steve, for the record, it's not just Oliver and the Red Lion experiencing this. Mom and pop businesses nationwide took out more than $300 billion in disaster relief loans to weather out the COVID storm. So there's a lot of money that folks will need to pay back eventually.
Yeah. So why not just throw in the towel? I mean, I hate to say that, but I mean, what's keeping him in business? Why not just shut it down?
It's honestly as simple as Oliver loves what he does.
You know, for me, what matters is like sitting behind that DJ booth and listening to the first stories of like, I never thought I would be here, but I did it right here. Like here, this place did it for me. This is where I first found myself.
It all comes down to the community that he's built at the Red Lion. The bar's been around for more than 5 years, and in that time, Oliver has tried really hard to build a nurturing community that looks out for each other. And Steve, it's worked. Here's Sebastian Delgado, who we heard from earlier again.
Queer people have always been like in the shadows for the longest time, you know, so to actually see people like be able to come out and be themselves in these safe queer spaces, like so important to just have these safe spaces where you can be yourself.
But Oliver does want folks to know that even though the Red Lion and other bars, restaurants, and businesses technically survived through the pandemic, the struggles they face are not going to end here.
Support the places that you love, you know, make a conscious effort to be like, you know what, I haven't been there in a minute and I want to support them, especially now with the capitalist society that we live in and how everything is getting expensive and how everyone is struggling. Know that you have the power.
So Steve, slowly but surely, Oliver and the folks at the Red Lion are getting back to whatever it is that we consider normal nowadays. Weekends there look like the before times, but they're still treading through uncharted territory and into a future that isn't set in stone yet.
For sure. KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo. Danielle, thanks for the update.
Hey, thank you so much, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
All right, more of Greater LA on KCRW into the Central Coast now, where the pandemic made a housing shortage near the UC Santa Barbara campus even worse. Last September, when school started, lots of college students had more than just classes to worry about. They were resorting to drastic measures to find shelter, any shelter, to live near the campus. Well, James Estrada, a fourth-year applied mathematics major at UCSB, spent some time shopping for a van to call home. Not an apartment, not roommates, a van. Here's what he told reporter Jackie Sedley back then.
The van kind of seems like the best option. You know, I know where I'm going to be sleeping every night. It's not like me looking for housing every day and just not knowing.
Well, now, nearly 8 months later, we're revisiting the Central Coast to see what happened to James and the other students with no idea where to live and whether next fall looks any better for them at UCSB. Jackie, welcome to you. Thanks for telling the story.
Hey, Steve.
I want to start with James Estrada. Is he still living in a van?
Yes. So he's still in that same van, but a lot has changed for him since September. So back then, he was parking on campus, showering at a gym that he had to pay a membership fee for, failing all of his classes, and overall just really struggling to find support. Now, if you fast forward to when he and I talked just a few days ago, things are definitely looking up for him.
I park on Trigo next to my friend's house. And they've kind of become my housemates because, you know, I cook there now, I shower there. You know, whenever we throw parties, people are always like, oh, who's this guy? And they're like, oh, he's one of our housemates and stuff like that.
So not only did James get to cancel his gym membership, but now he showers and cooks in a house, free of charge, by the way. Academic advisors also helped him get a retroactive drop from his fall classes, meaning the quarter won't count against his GPA or lead to academic probation. And he's also started seeing a therapist through the school.
Wow. All right. So things are better for James, even though he still doesn't really have a place to stay besides that van. I mean, does that mean he's made, I don't know, he's made peace with van life?
I mean, he's much more acclimated to van life now, and he actually really seems to be liking it. Over winter break, he completely renovated his van and made it more efficient with things like electric pumps for water instead of a foot pump. And it seems like the van has become less of a burden for him and more of a hobby. He says he thinks about ways he can upgrade his van at least once a day.
It's a lot of fun. I won't lie, like when I'm cutting up sections of wood for the sink or for the bed frame, I have to get like very creative with it. You know, I have a piece of graph paper out and I'm like, have the measurements across the side and be like, all right, this spot I can have the benches, this spot I can have the sink. And it becomes a lot of fun, especially seeing like once it works, really nice.
He told me he's actually grown excited to be in his van and that if he could change the past and get housing back in September, he wouldn't. He says he's gained more appreciation for the little things in life too, like hot running water and Wi-Fi connection. So for now, van life it is for James, and he seems pretty at peace with that outcome.
All right. So last September, you also spoke with Alexandria Matthews, an incoming transfer student over at UCSB. She was planning on attending remotely from Redding in Northern California, which is way up there, and then suddenly realized that she would need to move to Santa Barbara. I want to play what she said back then.
And then I find out end of July, as I'm looking for my classes, figuring out what I'm going to take, I find out 99% of them are in person and none of the classes I need are online. And then I talked to another academic counseling person and she was like, oh, didn't you know, like you have to be here in person. So that's when she pointed out all the housing things that I could look at on Facebook while I was crying to her because I don't want to be homeless.
Well, where is Alexandria now?
So she was planning on finishing her bachelor's degree and going to law school afterwards, but that plan is not on track right now. She struggled for months to find housing, like she said, and ultimately rescinded her acceptance to UCSB.
Wow.
I know. She says she would have chosen another university that she'd been accepted into, but it was too late at that point. So she's not in school at the moment. Instead, she works full-time, finding housing for developmentally disabled adults. And she actually started renting out an extra bedroom in her home in Redding to help nearby students struggling for housing. But the biggest change in her life, she's pregnant.
Wow. That is a big change. Pregnant.
I know. She really took a big pivot there after the housing crisis pushed her away from Santa Barbara, from law school hopeful to expectant mother not in college. And she doesn't really blame the housing crisis for her change in plans per se, but she does blame UCSB for not making it easier to go there. Now she says she wouldn't return to UCSB if given the opportunity. She thinks the school could have done a lot to help the students, but didn't. She still follows many of the student pages and says people are still looking for housing at insane prices, by the way. And overall, she wants to apply to college for the 2023 school year, but does not plan to stay in California.
You know, also back then, Jackie, not only were students resorting to sleeping in their vehicles or their vans or whatever it may be, but the school was placing a lot of students in hotels, right? Is that still happening?
Right, they were, but they aren't anymore. And while I can't tell you what happened to every single student that was in a hotel, I know that a lot of them were granted campus housing and others found off-campus housing in Isla Vista and Goleta for this quarter.
Is this just what housing is going to be like at UCSB in the future? Or, you know, was this a one-time pandemic-induced problem?
Yeah, that's a question I've been asking, too. If you ask UCSB's public affairs editorial director, Shelley Leachman, the situation will be better next school year. I reached out to Leachman via email, and she said that they expect to have the same housing capacity as last year for fall quarter. And they're also looking at potential master leases that could add more housing capacity. Those master leases are contracts between the university and the owner of an apartment building. She also told me that emergency hotel housing will not be offered again next year, even though a lot of students have reached out apparently asking about that option. So to sum it up, last year, housing was not clear, as Alexandria was saying. She was caught in this last-minute problem about virtual versus in-person classroom decisions. But for now, UCSB fully plans to be in person, and that way at least students can plan ahead.
Well, what about that huge dorm that they were talking about building that was going to house thousands of students there? I mean, is the school still planning on building that?
You're talking about Munger Hall, I think, right?
That's the one.
Right. So that's the huge building that made headlines for its dorm rooms that don't have windows to the outside world. I did ask Leachman about that, and she said they're continuing with the, quote, planning process. It's hard to say what that means, considering that the school has not been transparent at all about what the process is, but it's still on the books to be built, apparently, just not anytime soon. And that's actually part of the reason that the city of Goleta, which neighbors Isla Vista, is suing UCSB. Not necessarily because Munger Hall is controversial, to say the least, but because they don't see it as a reliable plan that can be done within a reasonable time frame. And I mentioned this back in the fall before Munger Hall was out, but to give some more context to this lawsuit quickly, back in 2010, UCSB promised Santa Barbara County that they'd cap enrollment and build more housing by 2025, or once they hit 25,000 undergrad students, whichever happens first. That was a part of this long-range development plan. And on December 10th of last year, the city of Goleta filed a lawsuit against UCSB for breach of that plan. Essentially, they haven't kept up, and the city says that UCSB's unmitigated population growth and ongoing negative impacts, like students in Goleta's hotels and residential housing, are really hurting the city and its residents.
I know you go to UCSB as well, Jackie. Are you secured for housing next year? Do you have housing? Are you worried about it?
I'm really, really lucky to say that I have secured housing, but a lot of my friends still haven't, so I'm crossing my fingers for them.
All right, reporter Jackie Sedley filling us in on the fate of housing in and around UC Santa Barbara. Jackie, thanks. Much luck to you.
Anytime, Steve.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW and our anniversary episode that is checking back in with people you've heard from over the past year and on to a place called Bloom and Plume, the flower and coffee shop in historic Filipino town. Well, back in early 2021, we heard from the owner, Maurice Harris. His businesses were struggling. He was feeling anxious about the future.
I had to borrow money from my other brother to pay the rent for this location this month. I'm finally like at my wit's end. I'm supposed to be getting checks. I'm checking my account every like hour to see if a wire has gone through. One of my accounts is negative. Like, it's actually like in real time, it's insane.
He was, however, able to apply for and secure a PPP loan, and there had been a spike in business over the previous summer during the Black Lives Matter protests and a rush to support Black-owned businesses. He was hopeful for a second wave of PPP loans. Well, now, more than a year later, we wanted to know how business is going. And Maurice Harris joins us right now. Hey, Maurice.
Hello. How's it going? Thank you for having me.
How you doing? That's the question. How are you doing?
Actually, you know what? I'm doing great. Life has completely turned around. It's completely changed. The thing that's interesting is while the trend of Black Lives Matter have totally faded and it hasn't been great in terms of the amount of traffic that has come through, I will say that our government, with the CARES Act and some of the other LA grants and different things, my brother is so on top of it, my business partner, that is, that we actually have been able to save our business to the point where we are no longer in debt.
You said that, you know, that it
the trend, the Black Lives Matter trend. Isn't that what you said, that word? So let me, I want to hone in on that. Was it, do you think, has it faded? Do you think it was sort of the cause celeb at the moment and people aren't really interested in supporting Black businesses? I mean, what's going on there, do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, we think that in this country, we think that we can just like kind of work on a problem for a second and then it's solved and then move on, as opposed to it being like an active practice that we have to do all the time. So my business is open every day. And during the Black Lives Matter movement, we had lines around the block. We were serving, you know, 150 people a day, and we're back to serving probably 40 to 50 people a day. So I would equate that as a trend, because the amount of volume of people coming out of their way to support specifically Black-owned businesses has definitely shifted. I think everybody's also going back to work and they're distracted by other things that are going on in the world and in life, and it isn't just the top story of the moment. So, you know, luckily we have a beautiful brand and we have a beautiful product, and we're consistent that people still come, but it is not in the numbers that it used to be.
When you hear yourself, right, from more than a year ago and at a time when things just really weren't going very well, I mean, what goes through your mind?
I can't believe I made it through, actually. Yeah. I was like, gosh, I sound so defeated when I hear that, even though I knew I was going to keep...
Well, I mean, that was the sound of a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people were defeated. I mean, it was a tough time for a lot of folks.
It was really, really challenging. I mean, I didn't... I knew something was going to work out. I just didn't know exactly how. And to be on the other side of it in such a extraordinary way is pretty remarkable. I didn't really see that coming. So I feel very fortunate. I am a very, very hardworking person, as I think most people are. I think I'm pretty talented, and I think we have something really beautiful and great. And to be able to continue to have our doors open to share that is pretty awesome. I mean, I won't lie and say that I'm not so fatigued and so tired and super emotional. And my brother and I are constantly just like, okay, one more day. Okay, one more mile. Okay, one more thing. And it has been really, really emotionally taxing. But we're here and we keep doing it.
What keeps you going when you're sort of at that place where you're just not sure, right? It was so much. Things are brighter now, but you still know that there can be other things that hamper you in the future.
I don't feel like I have the privilege of a safety net, so I don't give myself a lot of options to not make it work. I don't necessarily call them failures. I say it's like we constantly are pivoting. When people weren't able to buy coffee, we started an online store so that people could buy mugs and people could buy t-shirts and things that could still support the business. When people came back, we like brought back flowers. We're always trying to find ways. I'm a hustler. I try to be a clever person. And so I'm always trying to find a new creative solution to keep our business alive, because it not existing isn't an option for me.
So from this point, you know, what are your visions for the future of Bloom and Plume? Barring any, you know, again, unforeseen things.
I mean, I think that I love the experience that we're able to create for the people that come to our business. So I want to be able to expand that and share that with more people throughout the United States, maybe through the world. So opening up other shops or different possibilities, whether that's like a mobile version or other physical locations. And we're just still trying to hone that in at what exactly that looks like, because there are lots of hurdles every which way you turn. And we want to make sure that we're doing that with the path of least resistance. Being that both me and my brother do not work in the business, we work on the business, and we both have other jobs, we want to make sure that it doesn't drain all of our energy, but also we're able to stay tapped in long enough that it can grow in the way that it needs to.
Maurice Harris, the owner of Bloom & Plume on Temple Street in historic Filipino town. Maurice, good luck to you. Thanks for coming on the show and giving us an update.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to hear from you all.
That's going to do it for us today on GLA. Tomorrow, Starbucks employees at a couple hundred of its stores, here in SoCal too, by the way, are trying to organize. Is there interest? Is there some backlash? You're going to hear about it tomorrow right here on Greater LA. Always online, by the way, at kcrw.com/GLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Share with us what's on your mind and give us some story ideas as well. What's a story you'd like to hear on Greater LA? We'd love to hear from you. kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Talk, Christine Camito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you as we celebrate 3 years on the air and online at KCRW. Thank you for your part in that and for keeping us going. You are the reason why we're here. And here's to an even greater LA. Have yourself a fine night.